Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing down-to-earth conversations about the realities of our real-life experiences. I'm your host, Lisette McKenzie, author, life and mindset transformation coach, and self-concept connoisseur. And together with my girls, Alicia and Natira, we'll be discussing everything from situations to situationships and the challenges women face every day as we navigate this thing called life.
Okay, y'all, welcome back to Between a Talk and a Hard Place podcast. We have a brown girl in the ring. My guest today is entrepreneur, advocate, sexual assault prevention, diversity and inclusion educational awareness training tool designer, baker, disabled Army veteran, mother, author, and survivor. She's the CEO and founder of Interactive Advocacy and Emerging Educational Training Company that offers an innovative and cutting-edge new approach to performance-based training. And she's also one of the contributing co-authors to the Amazon bestseller, Sisters in Arms, The Black Diamond Experience, Our Rise to Significance book collaboration. I can easily say, but wait, there's more, but I'm gonna let her tell it. So without further ado, welcome Ms. Tanya Jones.
Hello, thank you so much, Lisette. I appreciate you allowing me to be here today. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining. First, I wanted to just touch base on the chapter of the book before I let you loose. And your chapter in the book is titled Brown Girl in the Ring. Yes. And I can't stress enough how furious the words you wrote made me, not only for you, but for everyone else who is who has or is going through what you went through, myself included. So when I read that, I was like, oh my God, this woman is pulling at all the heartstrings, it was an emotional chapter with a happy ending, because look at you now.
Yes. absolutely.
With that being said, I'm going to give the floor to the brown girl in the ring and just tell us a little bit about what influenced you. How did you get to this point? How did this chapter in your book, in the book, get you to this point?
Yes, Lisette. So thank you so much for this platform. So yes, just a little bit of history about the brown girl in the ring. The brown girl in the ring, it was a nursery rhyme that we would sing in Panama, which is where my family is from. Originally, it was thought to be originally established in Jamaica. It was a little game that people would play, kind of like Ring Around the Rosies. Mm-hmm. And so girls would kind of stand up around in a circle, and basically they would sing this song, there's a brown girl in the ring, fa la 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 la, and one of the girls in the center of the circle would dance, and on the girls outside the circle would chant her on as she was dancing and kind of elevating her and allowing her to feel beautiful. And I always loved that game because I played it at a time when I didn't always feel so beautiful. I didn't always feel very secure. And so that game made me feel safe at a time when I didn't always feel safe. So just a little bit about that. I was actually born in New York, raised in Panama with my grandmother. My mom and my dad was working in the States. And so many summers, I would go back home. And I think a lot of Caribbean parents did that when they would go to the US, they would send their families or their children back home, so to speak, spend time with their grandparents. And so, you know, I was no different. And my grandmother, who would tell us like amazing stories and take us on amazing trips all over Panama, I heard her sing this song for the first time. And it was one of our adventures. I don't know, we was picking something from some tree. And that was the first time I ever heard her sing the song. And then there were some neighborhood girls that we would play this game with once we all learned how to play it. So again, we would stand in a circle, they would sing Brown Girl in the Ring, fa la 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 la. and they would say, like, show me your motion, and the girls would, one girl would go in the ring, and the whole point was that every girl had an opportunity to go in the ring. Every girl had an opportunity to feel beautiful and empowered and special, and I absolutely love that. And I love that, again, because it was almost like a sanctuary, that safety, where I didn't always feel safe, because there were predators always lurking, you know. And I've always been one of those individuals, and it's actually something that I've taken into my adulthood, that I never really liked being lurked at. You know, some people don't mind folks looking at them and gawking at them, and I've always had a problem of that, or with that, and it's primarily because of the instances that happened to me. Right. So my grandmother was this phenomenal, beautiful, strong woman, amazing person. I absolutely adored her. And I remember, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, I remember there was this huge mango tree across the street from us. And my grandmother would always chant at us and tell us to stay out of the tree, because there were black snakes in the tree. Mm-hmm. And we would just like, okay, grandma, we hear what you're saying, but we're going to go in the tree, because they had these big, huge, beautiful mangoes that we were but the thing is, you know, she would always warn us, because that's just who she was. I mean, everything she did, she tried to keep us safe. I mean, that was just her. She had would always have all her grandchildren with her. We would go with her everywhere she went. And but of course, you know, there were times when we were not with her. And unbeknownst to her, those times in her absence were times that I was, you know, touched inappropriately as a child in the care of people that she trusted. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as I started to develop this fear of being around other people, you know, people looking at me, people watching me, because there was this fear that someone would touch me inappropriately, I think I started to withdraw a lot as a youngster. Mm-hmm. Again, the only time that I felt safe was when I was with those group of girls.
Right.
And the thing about the brown girl in the ring, for me, it became a champion song, because as I got older, I found that it kind of navigated me in different ways. This brown girl in the ring that needed a ring of girls to kind of elevate her. As I got older and had sisters, I recognized that I now needed to be the ring to protect them.
Right.
So it kind of manifested into this different form of a ring. And and when I think about ring as I'm growing older, in that way, I now look at the ring as like a boxer in the ring. Mm-hmm. So and you've got this ring around you, and the boxers are inside.
Right.
And so now I become this fighter, so to speak. And now I'm championing and just trying to protect.
Right.
Those that are closest to me. And again, these are my sisters. So there was a second time as I got older where my parents had to leave us with some family friends. And unfortunately, during the time that they left us with this family friend, once again, I found myself being touched very inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And I talk about it a little bit in the book. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where I remember as a young person, when this person did this to me, I saw him watching my sister. And as a young person, I had to be about 8 or 9. Wow. As a young person, I remember begging the person, because there was this whole scenario about pulling us into the closet and taking us into the closet. And I remember telling this person, please, whatever you do, don't take my sister into the closet, because I knew what he did to me in the closet.
Right.
And I felt like if he was going to do it, don't do it to her. Do it to me. So right. I begged him, please don't take her in the closet. If you have to take someone in the closet, take me in the closet. And because I just had to protect her.
Right.
So it was just those kind of things that I thought about as far as the brown girl in the ring, just needing to do that. And then, of course, as I got older and found myself in a situation where I was now married. And this is kind of a journey. I apologize.
Right.
But this is just snapshots of different times that stand out. But when I was in a marriage to my children's father, unfortunately, I was in a domestic violence situation. And the crazy thing about that is that we got married very young. And I think that the signs were always there. But as a young person, you just make excuses. You ignore. You say that, you know, this will pass and the person just had a bad day or whatever the case may be. And you just kind of ignore a lot of things. So I did that. Okay. And we were in the military at the time. So I think that when we transitioned out of the military and he got back home and was around his friends and family in an area where he felt comfortable to be himself, I always say that the monster emerged. And in the beginning, I used to think that this person that I cared about and loved so much, if I could get him out of that situation, that who this person he was becoming would change and he would go back to who he really was. And as I, after I separated from him and ultimately got divorced, I realized that that monster was who he always was.
Right.
The person I was married to was, you know, the temporary
the imposter
who he was. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there was one time specifically that I also talk about in the book that was the breaking point for me that I knew that I had to take flight. I thought about in that particular instance, again, being that brown girl in the ring, and this time needing to protect my children, who was 1 and 10 months old at the time.
Wow.
And realizing that had I, stayed in that situation, that not only was I worried or concerned about what he would do to me or what could happen to my children as a result of all of the turmoil that was happening around us, I was also afraid of what I would do to him because I had become this fighter. I had become this person that realized that by any means necessary, I would do whatever I needed to do to save, protect those that were closest to me, my children, my sisters, you know, and I just thought, no more, this is enough. And so as a result of that, I said, I've got to go. I've got to. And I packed up my babies and threw whatever I could throw into a bag.
Mm-hmm.
I never looked back. And I think after I left that situation, a part of me said, you know, no more. I've got to totally change how I do things, how I champion for things, how I advocate for things. And I think that situation is what took me ultimately on the journey that I am on right now. And, you know, I look back at my life and I say, you know, everyone has a story, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has experienced different things in their life. And for some of us, they were very traumatic.
Right.
And I don't have any regrets about any of the experiences that I had because I recognize that even though individuals go through things, not everyone is able to advocate or champion or use their voice so that they can connect with other people. And I felt like that was something that I could always do. So maybe by design, it was meant to happen to me because I was going to be one of those individuals that can talk to individuals and say, you're not alone. This did not only just happen to you. There's so many other people that similar stories, similar situations happen to them as well. And we can stand together. Right. And even if you can't speak, I can speak and I can lift you up. And maybe if I was a different person, I may not have been able to do that. I may have, this may have impacted me in a completely different way. I might, you know,
yes.
Went to drugs or suicide or so many different things that you see in these.
Like many people do, right?
Many people do, exactly. So for me, I just felt like, how can I use this bad situation and turn it into something powerful and enlightening? And so ultimately, that's what led to this chapter in the book.
Awesome.
So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
I read, you have a part in your book, and it says, it really stuck out to me. So you said that family members always referred to you as a fighter, but never thought to consider or ask why. And when I read that, I thought back to how many times my family called me, oh, she's feisty, she'll fight you. Until I read that, it never occurred to me, it never connected how often I felt like I needed to be on the defense when someone was in my personal space, when someone was in the personal space of people that I love. And I was always, because even today, they're like, oh, she's nasty, she's rude, she's a fighter. And I will snap at you if I feel, you know, like if you're coming at me, I will get snappy. I'll be nice, nasty. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I read that and it connected, because I've been through the same thing you've been through, including the domestic violence. And it's just like an automatic response to wanting to be safe and feeling like that's the only way you can be safe.
Yes.
And nobody, and I guess maybe it's because people trust people, and our family members trusted these people.
Absolutely.
But you have to, at some point, you would hope in the future, you know, for anybody listening to this, who, if it's not them, maybe it's their children, think about why they're acting out this way. What is causing it? Kids aren't born to, you know, they don't come out fighting. They don't come out angry. They don't cry until the doctor smacks their booty. So, you know, people need to start really looking closely at the actions, the behaviors, how the kid used to be compared to how the kid is now. What's causing that? So I thank you for connecting that for me, because I really never looked at it that way.
And you know, when I wrote that, what inspired me to write that is because every year we have family reunions and get-togethers, and for the most part, I typically don't participate. Mm-hmm. And many of the reasons is because a lot of the individuals, because they're family friends, they've been indoctrinated into the family almost as if they're family. And then family members, they are a part of the family. So it's like you travel and you go places and you see these individuals. Mm-hmm. So I made a conscious decision to say that even if we're family, and I love you for the sake of blood, I don't have to interact with you. I don't have to participate in being in your space or allowing you in mine. But one of the things that would happen when we would go to these events or family gatherings, that, you know, they would, the older folks, the grandparents and the aunties, they would always reflect back to my generation or my age group and say, oh, well, when this one was a little girl, she would do this. Or when this one was a little boy, he would do this one. And they would identify us, and this one did this and this one did that. Mm-hmm. So whenever they would get to me, I would cringe, because they would always say, and this one there, exactly, he was always the fighter.
Yes.
And I'm like, the fighter? Why? She always fighting, and they would do this little thing, and all you used to see was her hands.
Yes.
And I remember before I wrote this, at the very last family event that we went to, they did this, and they said, you know, it just seemed like at one time she was such a sweet girl, and then the next thing you know, every time you look around, she was just fighting. And I thought about that. And in that moment, I just felt so enraged. This is something that had happened to me as a child. Mm-hmm. And I've gone to counseling, I promise you. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this all the time. So I always, I feel very comfortable sharing this story now. But in that instance, it just kind of, it was like a trigger for me.
Right.
And it took me back to this space. And I remembered thinking to myself, you all witnessed the change. You all watched, as I went from this shy girl to this, you know, laughing girl to this girl that all of a sudden was withdrawn and all she wanted to do was fight. Mm-hmm. You all saw this. You mentioned it so many times in joke and say, you know, we seen this change.
Right.
But no one ever thought to ask me why. No one ever thought to say, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay? And I think as a result of that, I needed to put that in there because I know, I'm sure family members are reading this thinking what in the world is going on. I've been getting a lot of calls lately. But I didn't put it in there because I don't need to like say, okay, this is the person that did it. I don't
right.
need to, well, why didn't you? It wasn't necessarily for you. It was for me. And it was for me to say, like you just said to your audience, to the audience, pay attention to your children. Pay attention to your family. If you're noticing change, and it may not be because of sexual assault mm-hmm. or domestic violence or child abuse. It may not be because of those things. It may be because of something different, but check in, you know, connect right. with the family, and especially young people who sometimes no longer have a voice. I mean, you hear about bullying and yes. all kind of things, young people taking their lives, unfortunately. We need to reconnect with our family and our loved ones and ask them, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you all right? Because the thing is, that has changed me. And to the point where I became so overprotective of my children mm-hmm. and my family. Sometimes to the point that it drove my poor boys crazy because Mama yeah. Bear just wouldn't let them... let them go because I was so, I wanted so much to keep them safe.
Right.
So the brown girl in the ring sharing that story about no one ever asked why I became this fighter was imperative that I added that in there.
It was when I read that, I was like, wow, it never connected until I read that. And oftentimes I'll tell people, what I say may not connect with everybody. What I say, you know, people receive words differently. My words may not be for everybody. Even if their situation is similar to something I've gone through, I may not be the one to get through to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that as long as I know that there's someone out there that's going to receive my words, get some understanding from it, and decide that they want to move forward in making themselves better. And when I read that, I was like, you literally connected with me.
Thank you.
I literally felt what you said and I understood
thank
it.
Thank you.
So thank you. And then I also, at the end of your chapter, you do have a poem in there that I absolutely love. I had to open the book and pull it out. It's by Obie West.
Yes.
And the very last part of it says, there's growth in togetherness, a growth hard to garner from a group of one. The synergy of interlocked fingers symbolizes common care. My village was built by joyous brown bodies, empowered with the magic to refurbish and make new. To my brown ring, thank you. I dropped the book. I said, you know what? Drop the mic.
Yes. Obie West. Oh my God. He is such a powerful, talented master of words. He is a spoken word artist, an advocate, native of California, an amazing body, a beautiful, beautiful friend. And so I reached out to him mm-hmm. and I shared with him what we were doing and told him about the book project. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, hands down, without a doubt, he was like, I got you. What do you need?
My goodness.
And so what I did was, the funny thing is, this is before I actually wrote my chapter. I came to him and said to him, this is what I wanted. And what I did was I talked to him and I shared the story with him and I told him the things that I wanted to talk about. And I told him about the brown girl in the ring and showed him the actual nursery rhyme and the whole thing. And he thought it was kind of funny. And but I told him and shared with him my connection and why it was so important to him and gave him an outline The outline that I used to write my story, I share my story. I gave him that outline and said, you know, could you please write me a piece that will embody what it is that I feel in song, so to speak, in a rhythmic way. And he has the ability to do that.
He is amazing.
He is amazing. He's an author himself. He has his own book as well, a couple of books, and you can find him everywhere.
Is like fresh off the press.
He recited the poem for me before he wrote it down, and I was blown away. I just started boohooing like you wouldn't believe. And I'm like, I cannot believe that I'm feeling like this. But it was because he was able to capture that snapshot of my journey in such a way that tied it all together. And I was like, I have to put this in here.
Yes.
Happen. And so it was so befitting to me that my chapter was the last chapter and that his poem was one of the last things that you read. And I just I just want to say thank
perfection.
You.
Yes.
He did the thing.
So. Perfection. Yeah. Did your grandmother, I know you were really close with your grandmother, did she ever find out about any of the things that you were going through?
No. So here's the thing. You know, I find that in Central America, in the Caribbean, I have a degree in cultural anthropology, and I also find that even in African American culture, there's this unwritten rule that, you know, we don't talk about things. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens in the house stays in the house, and you don't go outside and share, right? So as a result of that, there are times that family members witness things, sees things, or have a feeling about a thing, and they don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. They don't discuss it. So I want to believe that my grandmother didn't know, because had she known, she would have immediately put a stop to it. Mm-hmm. But a part of me feels like there's certain things that you can't help but know, because if you're cognizant of everything that's happening around you, you witness transformation and change in people. I don't know. My grandmother passed before I had an opportunity to share this with her. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was so protective of us. So I think that perhaps she didn't know.
Right.
And I'll say this too. There were times over the years, my mom and I, we had a rocky relationship. Mm-hmm. And it was primarily because there were times when I wanted to have this kind of conversation with her. And because she grew up in that era of, we move on, it was very hard to get that connection.
Right.
But what I realize is that sometimes when we think that we are alone and that people around us don't know what has happened, mm-hmm. I've come to realize that sometimes they know because the same thing happened to them.
Right.
And even though they're not able to articulate it, they can recognize it, and they try in their own way to keep you safe.
Right.
So I recognize some behaviors in my mom. I recognize behaviors that I had with my sisters. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of that extra protection my grandmother had for us could have been because of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I know that she championed for our safety. And these things only happened when she wasn't present. So, you know, that's all I know, you know?
Wow. And this is something that almost every family in the world goes through. There's someone right now who is experiencing this or who knows about this, and they don't know how to articulate it. They're told not to say anything. You know, what goes on in this house stays in this house. And while sometimes that's a good thing, a lot of the times that's really a really not good thing. And my son, you know, I had an issue with my son, and when he told me about something that happened, it hurt me because I felt like I was already being protective. But it's always, you know, you trust the people that are close to you.
Exactly.
And I learned that even though I trust you, I still need to be wary. I still need to keep my eyes open. I still need to be open to the fact that I don't know everything about you because you are not me. I'm still learning things about myself.
Yes.
So if I don't know everything about myself, how could I know everything about someone else? So I still need to be wary.
Absolutely. And the reality is too, that it's not even just about the victim or the survivor, right? Because a long time I learned, you know, hurt people.
That's right.
So, you know, even for those individuals that did these things, not to advocate for them because they were wrong.
Right.
But at the same time, where did these behaviors come from? You know, did they come out of something that was done to them?
Right.
So, you know, I think about, as an adult now, I think about all of these things. And as an advocate now, my filters have been readjusted. My lens have been readjusted. And I look at things and I see things a little differently now. So, you know, again, not championing for them, but I recognize that some of these behaviors, not talking about predators, but just some of these behaviors could have come from
something. Right. Absolutely. Wow. Well, your chapter was amazing. The work that you are doing is super phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So it says you're a baker here, huh?
Yes. This is so funny. You know, I have been cooking and baking since I have been yay high.
Oh my goodness.
There are pictures of me standing on milk cartons over the stove with my big afro. And it is just something that I've always been passionate about. A friend of mine said, you know, Tanya, you might want to just add a price tag to what you're doing. Kind of just go from there. So it is one of the things that I enjoy doing. I went through some significant health concerns at one point.
Okay.
As a result of this, the baking was something that I could do that was very therapeutic.
Okay.
So I do cupcakes and custom cakes, wedding cakes, all of that. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. And everything is a taste of the tropics. So there's a tropical influence there. So it was one of the ways that I could celebrate diversity, which is something that I'm passionate about through food. So it's just something that I've always enjoyed. And no matter what I do, I think I always love baking. But the reality is everyone wanted me to, you know, well, why don't you open up a bakery and do this. But what I realized that as much as I enjoyed baking, it wasn't where my ultimate passion was. I mean, I enjoy baking. I loved it. I loved the smiles that it brought on people's face. But my passion was in advocacy. My passion was in teaching and training. My passion was sharing my story and connecting with individuals that had stories to share.
Absolutely.
And as a result of the work that I've done over the years, I'm working in fields of diversity and inclusion and equal opportunity as an investigator, just so many different things that I've done over the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. This connection that I had to just raising awareness about situations such as sexual assault. Mm-hmm. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I've got my awareness ribbon on. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. But just recognizing not only my ability to speak to individuals about these things, but my desire to change the dialogue.
Right.
To change culture, to change how we think about sexual harassment and sexual assault and why these behaviors happen. If we don't, you know, have open, honest conversation that gears towards eradicating these type of violent behaviors from happening, they're going to continue to happen. And that does not change until we change the way that we speak to one another.
Right.
The way that we stand by and allow conversations to happen in our presence. you know, everything from racism to sexism. You know, we stand by sometimes and hear people make jokes and say nothing. We just kind of laugh at it.
Right.
Knowing that we don't feel comfortable.
But right.
Mm-hmm. So interactive advocacy was formed as a result of that. We are an emerging full service diversity and inclusion company. We also focus on areas such as sexual assault and sexual harassment. And what we do is we conduct training through performance-based theater.
Okay.
So the goal is to be able to connect with an audience in a very organic fashion by putting them in a situation with real world scenarios, right? So when they're watching the performances or the presentations on the stage, they're able to connect and at least have empathy because the scenarios seem so real.
Wow.
And there are a couple of other organizations that that do this type of work as well. So shout out to all of them. But what we do a little different is the psychodramatic piece that we bring into it. I can't tell you, unfortunately, because I don't want to give away all that tea.
Gotcha.
And because I want everyone to be able to go through the process organically.
Gotcha.
And then to be able to trust the process of everything that happens. But in the grand scheme of things, what we do is we put people in a situation where they feel very uncomfortable, but in a safe training environment.
Gotcha. You know, okay.
It's a collaboration with actors and advocates. And I'm very excited about that. It's something that we're doing that's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just looking forward to being able to connect with audiences on a grand scale, whether you're in a college environment or you're in a corporate or federal government environment. We want to be able to connect with your personnel because the reality is these type of behaviors exist everywhere.
Yeah.
Watching more and more of these type of behaviors happening all over the place, especially right now at the height of the Me Too movement. You know, we just have to change the dialogue. We have to change what we allow to happen in our presence. And when we see something, we need to say this is not going to happen. You know, I'm a firm believer that one person is enough. I'm a firm believer that if one person witnesses this behavior happening and they stand up and speak out against it, that we can eradicate it. I'm a firm believer that if this happened to one person, that it's one person too many. So, you know, if we don't stand up, engage, and stop these type of behaviors from happening immediately, they're going to continue.
It's going to continue. Absolutely.
Exactly. So that's interactive advocacy. I'm very proud of what I'm going to be able to do with that organization. And that's my baby. And that's my passion. And, you know, I'll eat a cupcake while I'm doing that.
Yes, I was going to say, you could advocate to them and feed them too. I'm still on stuck on the cupcakes.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. Exactly.
But Tanya, thank you so much for joining today. I look forward to hearing more from you.
Absolutely.
And seeing everything that you're doing. And I will put some links where people can reach you.
Yes. I before we go, I wanted to give a couple of shout outs.
Absolutely.
Please don't forget. I wanted to just so they can your folks can connect. So please bear with me because I didn't want to forget.
Go ahead.
So I want to give another shout out again to Obi West. Thank you so much for the amazing talent. He is the author of Blossom, which is one of his works, and he you can find him on his Instagram page at Obi West Words of West. He's a spoken word artist. And then I also want to give and that's his IG. I also want to give a shout out to the visionary behind Sisters in Arms, Andrea McKee. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of this project. Amazing. For the Sisters in Arms, Black Diamond Experience. You can find her on her Instagram page at Sisters in Arms. And then also, I want to give a shout out to Shaniqua Johnson, who is the publisher of Sisters Through Faith Publishing, Stronger Through Faith.
Stronger Through Faith, yes.
Find her there. And I just wanted to give a shout out for them and to you as well, Lisette, for this platform, for allowing me to kind of sit here with you today this afternoon and just kind of share a little bit about my journey.
I appreciate it. Hopefully you'll come back on. You have a lot to offer, so hopefully I can have you back.
Yes, please. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much.
All right.